Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, we love it. Or, more accurately, he love it. And we love him. It's John Lovett of Love It or Leave It and Pod Save America. And he's here to commiserate about the fine art of hilariously live podcasting the end of the world. Or, as I call it, the apocalypse. You're welcome. Apocalypse, everybody. But as long as we're spiraling down the drain, let's not be all negative about it. Let's keep it fun. It's time for a sunny round of feel-good feedback from you nobodies as we feature Mailbag Positivity Edition. I'm Adam Felber, this podcast cruise director, carefully scheduling the pre-planned fun time activities so that the karaoke contest on the Aloha deck doesn't disturb the stately progress of the shuffleboard tournament on the Lido deck. And now, please welcome the distractible captain, whose last words were, "Ensign, my drink is getting warm. How close can you get to that iceberg?" It's Paula Poundstone.
Hey, you guys. You know, speaking of positivity, I just want you to know that I am out there doing my best to try to spread it. But before I tell that story, I want to say thanks to tonight's house band, returning champ Kevin Kelso from Los Angeles, California, on the piano. Thank you, Kevin.
Yay, Kevin!
I love Kevin.
We love Kevin. Paula, what's new?
All right, so I try hard to spread positivity and kindness throughout the land. And sometimes I even use what I've learned on the podcast. So, like, if there's a parent who's struggling with a kid, I always like to give the parent, like, a little, kind of a little head nod that says, like, boy, been there, got it, don't worry about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or maybe I distract the kid for a second just to give the parents a chance to get their breath. I mean, from a distance, I wave or I say hello. Or I say, hey, little kid, you all right? Just something. And the thing is, when you do that, usually the kid is so shocked that they stop whatever, thing they... So, all right, so the other day, there's a kid like 2 years old, right? And so I'm walking and I stop. Now I stop, again, a distance away, but nonetheless... the kid's looking at me. And so I do. Remember when we had the mime on, and we had a mime on a podcast, ladies and gentlemen, and he explained how to do the window. Yes. You know, the key to it is that you put your hands up flat, but then you leave your hands where they are and that you move your head slightly. And so I do the little bit of mime I learned on the podcast for the kid. And the kid was like, and then I do the mime and the kid was like, and I just had to go like, sorry, been there. Yeah. And, you know, walk away quickly.
Oh, well, you know.
But I was trying. That's the important thing is I was trying.
I guess that's the important thing. I guess there are some people who would look at that and say, you did make that parent's life harder in your attempt to make it easier.
On the other hand, maybe that parent had a fun story to tell someone later. Like someone who wasn't good at mime at all scared my kid today.
Yeah. Or maybe she recognized you, and for her it was a celebrity encounter.
Or the parent could actually have thought I was on the other side of glass.
Right.
You know, one of those panes of glass that just show up.
Well, you know, people always seem to be moving those during car chases in big cities.
Oh, my gosh. Best one ever was What's Up, Doc? And by the way, if Barbara Streisand happens to be listening, if you could give me a call, that would be great. 310-828. I'm standing by the phones now.
What could possibly go wrong with announcing your number on a podcast? All right, it's time to bring to order our book club.
Woo!
Oh boy!
Wow.
And we are reading a page turner.
We are, in that we want to turn the page on this book as soon as possible. But I'm almost afraid to say this, but how come I just announced the book club and there was no theme song?
Oh, gosh. I have a theme song.
Oh, Adam, what the fuck's the matter with you?
Yeah, which you're supposed to do when I say book club, Bonnie. God damn it.
Okay. I have a theme song for you guys tonight. Ready? We got a book club. We got a book club. My mama done told me that we got a book club. We got a bookie club. We got a book club tonight. Who's a reader? Who's a reader? Who's a reader?
Wow.
That's
did
kind
you guys
of a melange.
See what I did there? Did you see what I did there?
Yeah.
It was a medley.
It was a medley. Yeah, it was.
Yes, it was.
It was more of a mashup than a medley, but I did appreciate it. It was great.
Yeah. It was sort of an overture. Took a little bit from each. Wow. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to call this shit to order. Now, for those of you just tuning in for the first time, this is, we're 75 chapters into Eat, Pray, Love now. We just read chapters 66 through 75 for this week's show. And oh my, at least there's motion, you know. At least she's not still on the ashram. What happened is, just to catch you up, she spent a lot of time ruminating in the ashram, and she had a super spiritual experience just because other people were there. And apparently she was filled with such glowing light that people had dreams about her. And then she went to Bali and pretended she was going to have trouble finding the medicine man she went there to find, and then she found him. There. I said it. Paula, what do you have to say about these chapters?
Well, was it within these chapters where she talks about creating your own religion?
Yeah.
Picking and choosing.
Yeah, picking and choosing, yes. Which I think I may have mentioned, last week, that I know for sure that Christians have been doing that forever. And I imagine that people of every long-standing organized religion do the same, just because it's comfortable, it's easy. You know, people who forget about the Old Testament because it's gory, and then the New Testament enthusiasts. I've just created my own religion, I think.
Really?
Well, first of all, I don't drink the blood of Christ or eat his bones in the form of the wafer. But I love Fritos and Ruffles potato chips. And
but are they a sacrament or do you just love them?
No, I just love them. They don't represent anything in particular.
See, this isn't sounding much like a religion yet.
Oh, it is. It is. Because I can eat them and my God appreciates it. And so I don't gain weight.
But you do sometimes, right?
No, I don't think so.
No, never? No, okay.
No, okay. No one has said so. And God speaks directly to me.
What does he or she or it say?
I think it's God. Like, I got a package the other day that I was trying to open, and it said lift here, and I think that was from God.
There are some who might say that that's a label on a package.
No, it's more of a... God is a technical writer, I feel. My God is a technical writer. Also, Inspector Number 46 on my jeans.
Right. You think that's God?
God leaves me a little note in my new jeans pockets, Inspector Number 46. And
that's a very nice message from God. Anything else we need to know about your religion, Paula? What do you believe happens after death?
Oh, in my religion, there is no afterlife in the Poundstonian death. You can...
This is going to be a tough sell for converts.
Well, you can become a really smelly doorstop. That's one thing that can happen.
I don't see a lot of people joining up on this one. I mean, you eat junk food, God sends you messages as a technical writer, and when you're dead, you're dead.
You know, all of religion is not, you know, good news. There's no fasting. There's no burning in hell. What are you kidding me? So far, what I've described to you is paradise on earth.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm interested in knowing more. So if you'd leave a colorful pamphlet at my door, I'll get back to you.
Happy to.
Meanwhile, do you have any other impressions of these 10 chapters of Eat, Pray, Love that we read?
No. I mean, she finds the medicine man guy that she was looking for. And she was surprised that he didn't remember her from when they had met like 2 years earlier.
But then, like everything, seconds later, that's replaced with a triumph. He didn't remember her because she's happy now.
Well, I kind of think that he just said that to her and that she was so dense that she repeated it. He was like, oh, you're the, when he couldn't remember who she was, he was like, oh, you're the woman from California. She was like, no, I'm the writer from New York. And then eventually he went, yes, you. And she was so excited. You know, like, you, I really think it would appear that he says the same shit to everyone.
It did feel that way. It totally did.
Yeah. A little bit like the Pope when he came and he said to John Boehner, and Boehner was so excited about it, the former Speaker of the House, can you do something for me? And Boehner was like, yeah, just tell me, yeah. And he said, pray for me. And Boehner wept over it. I mean, he used to weep a lot, but he wept over this. He was so excited. He dragged some press guys over, and he wanted to tell them what the Pope had said. And then I happened to have been watching television coverage of the Pope being around that day, and he had gone to a school in Harlem, and he says to the students at the school in Harlem, he goes, now the Pope has some homework for you, and the kids were so excited. And he goes, and here it is. Pray for me. Well, it turns out that's just what the Pope says. That's his catchphrase.
Yeah.
And it turned out it was like Jimmy Walker going like, dynamite. It's just the thing that the Pope says. So, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I think she fell for the medicine man's shtick.
I got the same feeling. And you know what really struck me is we have just trudged through something like 40 chapters in India where she triumphantly gets over her own sense of self and has the bestest meditation that anybody ever has and is the best in the world at being over her ego. And literally one chapter later, she falls apart because a medicine man didn't recognize her.
Okay, but wait. The steps forward that she had made only exhibit themselves in India. When she crosses the border, she's hard back at it.
I want to say one more thing about her pursuit of nirvana. I was reading those last few chapters in India, and it struck me that what she imagines a state of Zen all-knowingness sounds suspiciously like what you might get after a long session with a vibrator. Like, here's a quote. "This is why we chose to be born. This is why all the suffering and pain is worthwhile. Just for the chance to experience this infinite love. And once you have found this divinity within, can you hold it? Because if you can, bliss."
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, God made vibrators, so... Or he certainly wrote the instructions for them. So, because God is a technical writer.
You know, now I'm thinking about maybe converting to Poundstonianism. That was wise, Paula Poundstone. All right, let's move on to you know what? We always go to Sherman Oaks first. I'm feeling like we're leaving Bonnie Burns
out. You
do. Let's go to Bonnie Burns in the CV Valley. Bonnie, what did you think about these chapters?
Well, here's what I came to the realization today, which is the thing I enjoy most about this book is that writing my theme song. That's the most rewarding part of it for me. But this is a problem for me. When I read something that has people's opinions, it's got to be somebody I have interest in. I'm interested to know what Einstein thought. I'm interested to know what the guy who started Starbucks thought. I want to learn
the
something.
The guy who started Starbucks?
From a business standpoint, he created
because they haven't
something.
Done enough harm in the world. I know what Einstein thought. He thought you should read Eat, Pray, Love.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, people that have accomplished something, I'm curious, like, what happened to them. They had an interesting life. And I think here's the other thing. She has become arrogant because of the experiences she's had. And now she thinks she's better. It's like the Oprah thing. Like, she's more evolved than somebody who hasn't had these experiences, which is somebody who's not evolved at all.
I just can't believe we're going to let her off from these chapters without talking about her running out into the park at night to hug trees in India.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I was going to talk about that.
And her choice to publish those two poems in her book as well. Are we going to let her off at that? Or, Tony, are you going to take her to task?
She left the poems under the rug, didn't she?
Yes.
So she went running off into the night to hug trees. And then before she left, she took a poem that she wrote when she got into the ashram and one that she wrote on her way out and put them under the prayer rug or whatever right in front of the thingamajig.
Yeah. When the carpet cleaners came in, they were... I think you must have had some woman who's really into herself here. She left you these poems. Tony, what were you about to say about about her hugging the trees?
I was just shocked that she was out there making out with trees. She didn't only hug them, she was kissing them. No, I mean, that's one thing. Like, it just was a little bit like, come on. Really? You're making out with trees now? That's all.
Well, keep in mind, the guy from Texas who called her groceries, he had left already because if he had still been there, he would have called her Lichen Lips.
Tony, do you have any other observations about the chapters you just endured?
I mean, this book did make me want to go to Bali. That's it. I'll be honest with you. I didn't read all of the chapters this week either. Just to be transparent.
Yes.
It's a very busy week. Oh. But I'm excited. I remember loving the Bali chapters the most. Also, we're going to get to the love part.
Oh, so there will be sex.
Perhaps.
Okay, no spoilers, yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you didn't give it away, Tony.
I do want to leave us with one thing. I want to read a little bit of this poem because, you know, when you read about Elizabeth Gilbert, she's been accused of something called privlit, which is literature based in privilege, white privilege, imperialist privilege, privilege of somebody with money. And, you know, I've been trying to excuse her for this. I mean, a little bit, because a person wants to travel and discover themselves. Fine with me. But remember that guru who was the guru for her guru. She sees a picture of him and she believes that he's kind of talking to her.
It was like Swami G or something.
Prince Ugly Face.
Anyway, I think that might be wrong, Bonnie, as far as the name is concerned. My point is that when she fantasizes in the poem she wrote about coming across him and what it was like, it does sound a little bit like she's really, she's making him sound. Can I just read this?
Please.
My path was beaten unconscious before me by a small brown man I never got to see, who chased God through India, shin deep in mud, barefoot and famined, malarial blood, sleeping in doorways, under bridges, a hobo, which is short for homeward bound, you know. And now he chases me saying, got it yet, Liz? What homeward means? What bound really is? Besides the Dr. Seuss cadence she's trying to affect there, I have to question. She's talking about a guru who eventually traveled the world and had his own ashram and spoke at places, but she needs him to be shin deep in mud, barefoot, small brown man. Am I wrong in thinking that that's a little bit patronizing?
No, you're not wrong.
You didn't get to the part about thing one and thing two.
You're right. And then I heard a door, and in with a slam came thing one and thing two into my ashram. They jumped up and down and had a quick fight, and then they all moved into shining blue light. All right, let's...
Wow, it's very good.
I wrote it for a Dr. Seuss themed television show once. Anyway, here we go. I'm calling the book club to a close. We're going to do the next 10 chapters next week. May God have mercy on our souls. All right. And with that, hey, Our Lady of Paula, do you have any vocabulary word for us this week?
I do have a vocabulary word, Adam. It's perspicacious. It's an adjective that means having a ready insight into an understanding of things. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. My perspicacious dogs get excited when I put my sneakers on because they might be going for a walk. It might be helpful if I use it in a family setting. That shirt is so wrinkled and it's covered in grease stains. It looks like you slept on top of buttered popcorn in it. That's perspicacious, Mom. Could you pass the mashed potatoes? Here, I'll give you the butter, too. Well, isn't that perspicacious of you? Could the two of you stop speaking Pig Latin at the dinner table? It's not Pig Latin. It's a word he learned in school today. He didn't have school today. It's undaysay. Now hand me the old say. Perspicacious is a great word. Well, I've frequently used the word perspicacious myself.
Oh, it's Mrs. Culpepper.
Well, yes, it is. Ah, Mrs. Culpepper. I'd like to sing the vocabulary song for you if I could. This week's word is perspicacious. It's an adjective that means having a ready insight into an understanding of things. I have a sense a 20-year-old is not an Olympic swimming contender if he's still wearing water wings. Last week's word was flagitious. It's an adjective that means criminal, villainous. Like whoever keeps talking Tony Anita Hull into going on cruises and leaving us. The week before that, the word was ninny hammer. It's a noun that means a fool or simpleton, like Adam Felber, who can never remember how Captain Culpepper came to be undone. Hey. Going back before that, the word was horripilation. It's a noun that means the erection of hair on the skin due to cold, fear, or excitement. I get them whenever I recall Captain Culpepper. He was such a gent. And not long ago, the word was ineffable. It's an adjective that means too great or extreme to be expressed in words. The beauty of my red sateen dress rivals the most beautiful of birds. And not long ago, the word was nader. It's a noun that means the lowest point in the fortunes of a person or organization, like the loss of Captain Culpepper, because for me, he was the only one. Let's never forget Gallimaufry, which Paula pronounced wrong until nobody James Hyder corrected her. It's a noun that means confused jumble or medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think Paula's song is replicable, replicable, replicable. But I do, I do, I do, I do.
Mrs. Culpepper.
I wish the captain were alive to have heard that performance.
I do too, Mrs. Culpepper. I do too. It's too bad he had to go the way he did in the heat of battle.
It was the gooter that got him, you ninny hammer.
I meant a battle with Gouda.
It was the Gouda. Gouda that got him.
Coming up, Mark Twain said, "It usually takes me more than 3 weeks to prepare a good impromptu speech," which is probably why his podcast was such a snooze. We'll talk speaking and speechifying with John Lovett next on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Who's podge? Hodgepodge? Who's podge?
Hey, everybody. As longtime listeners know, when Helix Mattresses first started sponsoring our show, Bonnie Burns somehow got the drop on me and made off with the first mattress. But in the intervening years, I have gotten myself a Helix mattress. I've had it for almost a year now, and it has improved my sleep. It has improved my life. I could not be happier. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, which I have, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, which is a mattress designed just for big and tall sleepers, and they even have mattresses made just for kids. Now, if you're like me and you were a little nervous about trying it online, or like Paula, who was screaming in fear of buying a mattress online, don't be. The Helix Sleep Quiz takes into account your individual sleep preference to match you and your partner with the perfect mattress. I took the quiz and I ended up with the great mattress for a side sleeper, the Helix Midnight Lux. Take my word for it, everybody. The Helix Midnight Lux.
Oh, don't want to take Adam's word for it. I don't blame you. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula and use the code HELIXPARTNER20.
This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Paula, no. I invited you over, but you fell asleep. helixsleep.com/Paula, and if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin Alhassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me down there my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts. And follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
On this day in unremarkable history, Senator Susan Collins said, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me a third time, it's back on you again, isn't it?"
And we're back. Thank you, house band Kevin Kelso. Woo! Tickly Nose Ivories. Paula Poundstone, how you doing these days? What with all that's going on in our country?
Oh, my gosh, it's depressing. And, you know, I watch a lot of news. I read the occasional article as well, but I watch a lot of news. I listen to a lot of political podcasts. It's just, I don't think there's any other way of saying it. It's depressing.
It is. I sometimes wonder how they cope.
Don't you?
I do.
How do they not just blow their brains out? The people who have to report this stuff and read up on it and know about, you know, I feel like I do it. It's partly for my job. I feel like I'm supposed to be aware of what's going on in the world, but I don't, you know, I don't know how the others do it. I don't.
I got to tell you, the last 2 years in the Bill Maher shop where it was the beginning of the Trump times, and it was a misery. So I don't know how they're holding up these days either, but we have somebody here by amazing happenstance who is an expert in that subject.
No.
Oh yeah. Not just an expert, but somebody that you and I both listen to, Paula. You're not going to believe who our guest is.
Chet Huntley?
You know, damn it, Paula. I work so hard on those introductions every week and at the beginning of the show, and you just don't listen. Anyway, John Lovett is a former speechwriter for President Barack Obama. He co-hosts the podcast Pod Save America and hosts Love It or Leave It, which just recently returned to live on Thursdays right here in Hollywood, California. Please welcome John Lovett.
Oh, I like him too. Yay. Yeah. You
do. Thank you so much for having me. I do like to think of myself as a gay Jewish Chet Huntley. sort of. So it really means the world to me.
Yeah.
To even invite this comparison.
Yeah, you've checked that box, the gay Jewish Chet Huntley. And you're living, and that's so important.
Yeah, exactly.
Very, very important.
Easier to book.
Much easier to book. I listened to Pod Save America, and then I've listened to Love It or Leave It, which both of which are terrific, by the way.
But thank you.
Isn't it stressful and depressing? What's your process? How do you do it without blowing your brains out?
Thank you for listening. First of all, let me say that.
Well, it's not just me.
And it's not just you. No, that's an important
dozens
thing.
Dozens of people who listen.
Dozens, tens of people at least.
Yeah.
No, you got tons of listeners. You guys did the Greek, for God's sakes.
So I feel really fortunate that we get to make these shows because I would be stressing about consuming in great amount the news if I didn't have these outlets. And I feel very fortunate that I've been able to take a lot of my fear and anxiety and hope and other good feelings when I am consuming vast quantities of political coverage and being able to convert it into something I hope is useful for people. Because we, you know, we've been doing these shows now for a couple of years, and we started it because we were really dissatisfied news consumers ourselves. We felt like there was a lot of really great news coverage, a lot of great investigative journalism, but the analysis, there was a space for a different kind of conversation that was a little less self-serious, a little bit more honest about what the country was going through. And especially after Trump, that basically, I think a lot of punditry, a lot of analysis, it treats the viewer or the listener like a cynical observer, like it's space aliens covering the news for space aliens, trying to understand what's happening in America, like a nature documentary. And we're not observers. We are citizens with agency. We should participate. And the news should, the coverage should offer you not just what is broken, but like, here are the ways you can be involved, be a part of fixing these problems. Because after Trump was elected, we got so many questions from people like, what do we do now? Right? This is a calamity. This is a crisis. How do I stay in this fight? And we didn't feel like we had the answers. We didn't think anybody had all the answers, but we wanted to find a place where we could build a community and get people together to think through what was going on in the country, think through ways people could get involved at the local level or at the national level. And so, like, I don't love the news. I think I'm where you are. It can be pretty depressing. It is pretty frustrating. Like right now, as we're recording this, we've got two senators basically holding up the entire Democratic agenda because it's just not their vibe, you know? They're just not feeling it. And like, that's like super frustrating.
Yeah.
And then you say to them, okay, let's negotiate. And they're like, no, we don't want to negotiate. We just are just like not feeling it.
John, that was a terrific response. And I don't want to make you feel like you're not unique, but that's exactly what Chet Huntley would have said.
I should have done it with more of a kind of mid-Atlantic accent, a kind of that sort of old fashioned that they used to speak on the news from the front.
That's how CH used to do it. Now, I've been listening to you, by the way, on Pod Save America for a couple of years. And today I took that leap that so many listeners take, when they come of age, which is I Googled you. And I saw pictures of you for the first time. All this time, I thought you guys were like child prodigies. Like I had no idea that you were mature adults. But then when you do the timeline in your head, like you still had to have been very young when you were worked for Obama. How did you get hired for such a job when you were so young?
You know, it's interesting as you ask that question, because, you know, we're both podcast hosts. And I sometimes think to myself, what's the perfect question I could ask to put a guest at ease? And sometimes I think the best thing to say is you sound really immature, but you look so old.
Yeah, that how is does it. That work? That's the Poundstone way. No. It's so.
I'm going to say something to you right now.
No, Chet, I think. Chet and Huntley, that's fine.
Chet Huntley never would have taken that way. Right, oh, now, wow. You veered off the Chet Huntley, the CH path.
Look, here's that was it. That's when I lost that Chet Huntley spirit that I'd been cultivating for so long. You know, look, we were John and Tommy, John Favreau, Tommy Vitor, who I started Crooked Media with. They were longtime Obama staffers. I worked for Hillary Clinton, and then I worked for President Obama as a speechwriter. That's where I met John and Tommy. I was like really young, and in hindsight, quite unqualified and deeply in over my head when I started as a speechwriter. And actually, you know, like we all have that list of things we said in our 20s that we regret, that we keep in like the core of our chest, you know, that like little list of little cringy, embarrassing things we said. And we all have that list. Yeah. But then you remember that everybody has that list and nobody remembers anybody else's list. I tell myself that. I remember when I started as a speechwriter at the White House, I was, I guess, 26 or 27, somewhere like that. And, you know, John Favreau, who is the chief speechwriter, hired me. He's a year older, about the same age. And when I first met President Obama, he laughed because he turned to John. And he's like, you found the only speechwriter that makes you look like a grizzled veteran, because we were these kids, you know, wandering around the White House.
Honestly, I'm surprised you were that old, because I am looking at your face on my Zoom thing right now, and you don't look old enough to have been 20. My guess
now she's backtracking.
No,
now she's backtracking.
My guess, No, I'm gonna say this, and I don't care what happens to you or John Favreau.
That's another way to really put your guests at ease, Paula. We've talked about that. No, hello, I think, welcome. I don't care about what happens to you.
Uh-huh. No, I think both of you guys had fake IDs. I do.
That means the world to me. I wish that I had been in a place where anyone would have thought that I needed a fake ID with which I could have procured alcohol for some kind of a social function. I was 21 before I got anywhere near a party. But that's sweet of you. Thank you for saying so.
By the way, Chet Huntley's list of shit he said in his 20s that he felt embarrassed about, huge.
And probably a little racist.
Oh. God. So now here's my other question. So you do a monologue on Love It or Leave It, which, by the way, you're back recording in front of a live audience at the Cine Lounge in Hollywood, just for those who would like to get tickets and go.
And we just returned. We were doing Zoom shows for 2 years, but we're finally back. We're doing live shows every Thursday night in LA. And then we're doing a big show at the Beacon Theater in New York on November 12th. How's that for a plug?
Yeah, wow, that's good.
So subtle. You didn't even feel good. It. It just happened.
No, yeah. I didn't even. A what? is there a relationship between writing a comedy monologue and writing a speech for a president?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I think there is. Well, first of all, you know, when I was a speechwriter, the first speech writing I ever did for Hillary Clinton were jokes for her to deliver at a roast. I believe it was a might have been a roast of Barbara Walters. Is that possible? But it's possible. But you know, for President Obama, I did a mix of very serious speeches. I also did a lot of the joke writing, or I helped with a lot of the joke writing that we did for the correspondence dinners every year, which is at those dinners where the president comes and roasts the press and roasts politicians. And those were some of the most fun speeches to write. But I do think that, you know, humor in politics is this really risky thing, because when a joke by a politician works, it creates this connection with the crowd. It's really valuable, but it's risky, because if a joke doesn't work, if a joke falls flat, it has the opposite impact, because whatever humor does, it is this kind of like, it's this way of saying, hey, we have some shared context, and I'm going to surprise and delight you with the fact that we share some aspect of this culture, some sense of the absurd, whatever it may be. And when a joke bombs, I think the reason it hurts is because it's this like almost primitive way of saying, like, we are different. We are not meant to be in communication. We are not the same. And I think that's why I think politicians sometimes are, they both want to be funny, but they're really nervous about jokes. And the joke is the first thing you would cut from a speech, because it's just not worth the gamble.
But your old boss could really land a joke, though. But
incredibly.
I have to interrupt to ask you something. Famously, at one of those White House correspondence dinners, Obama landed a few jokes on Donald Trump that a lot of people think are created the wound that caused him to run for office. So I guess my question is, John, are you responsible for those jokes? And did you destroy our country? And in some ways, is this podcasting that you're doing a way of trying to atone for what you've done?
Wow, that was hard to hear. That was a hard thing to hear, and no one's put it so bluntly before. I'm just gonna need to take some time to think about it.
Was that at a correspondence dinner, or was that at the what's the one? What's the other one?
There's the Al Smith dinner. No, the night of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which was also the night of the Bin Laden raid, was the night where President Obama did a number of jokes about Trump, and then Seth Meyers did a number of jokes about
Trump. That's right. Did you have anything to do with that night?
Yeah, no, I mean, we worked, that was, we were writing jokes. That was also the week that they released the birth certificate. So I remember, you know, we had worked on a bunch of different jokes for President Obama to deliver. We were really excited. We had a bunch of stuff about the birth certificate was in the news. And then all of a sudden there was this last minute press conference called. And I remember John and I were like joking, like, imagine if it's the birth certificate and we just have to throw out all these great jokes we already wrote. And then it was the birth certificate. Figured the whole speech. We were going right to the last minute. We were coming up with things. And then for whatever reason, the time we were supposed to have with President Obama to go over the material just wasn't, we couldn't get the time we were supposed to have, which we always would have. And I remember we were sitting outside the Oval Office waiting to go in, and there was a meeting that was going long. And you know, in retrospect, it was related to the bin Laden raid. And the word came down like, sorry, it's just going to be a little bit longer. And we were like, hello, this is important. We have the jokes for the speech. The speech is tonight. There's nothing. I don't understand. I don't know who's running this place, but we need this time. And later, Jon Favreau and David Axelrod and I, we went in to meet with the president, and we went over the speech. And there was a reference. There was a joke that had referenced bin Laden, and he changed it to Hosni Mubarak. And it made it a slightly worse joke, but it's like, well, you got the electoral votes and that's fine. You're in charge and you liked all the other stuff. So we felt good about it. And then later when we found out why we had not been able to get time and why he had changed the joke, it really felt like we were like a couple of Seinfelds that had like wandered into a Tom Clancy novel and nobody told us. I remember like we were outside the Oval Office, and there was like a national security like aide out there, like kind of a little bit, you know, obviously now we know, like kind of feeling the intensity of what was going on behind the scenes. And we were like, can we tell you some of these great jokes? And we got nothing from this guy. And it turns out he was distracted.
Yeah, it turns out. Well, if it means anything, my takeaway from that night, you know, I know bin Laden, blah, 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 Trump, blah, blah, blah. But those are some really high quality jokes.
Yeah, it was one of the jokes. I remember it was in a previous year, Judd Apatow was on a tour and he had wanted to help with jokes. And he felt as though I'd like prevented him from like I was like trying to keep him from writing jokes. We had like he felt I had like cock blocked him from the president. That's to use his word. Those are his words, not my words. And I called him and I was like, hey, we're trying to figure out these Trump jokes. And we ended up going back and forth on the phone for a while. He had this idea for this joke about basically comparing being president to being The Apprentice, the host of The Apprentice. It was so funny. It was an incredible joke. And it was outside of, I think, President Obama's wheelhouse in that it wasn't like a true setup punchline. It was really a story. And we weren't totally sure if it would work. And then we brought it to him in that meeting when we finally got in to see him, and he did it. And it was so funny. And we were so excited. And then he absolutely crushed it in the room.
So blame Apatow is what you're saying.
So yeah. Absolutely. Did I just hear you shirk responsibility? I think you did.
Yeah. You're going to hear, listen, keep your ears honed. I'm going to shirk responsibility several times during this conversation.
I think it's open.
Pricked was really where you wanted to go with that.
Explain to me. He couldn't say pricked after he said cock blocked. All right. So I don't remember that about it being the same night as the bin Laden raid. Yeah. So he's on stage at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which really, in terms of the importance of that event, could pretty much be drop kicked. So he's on stage at that thing while bin Laden is being stalked?
I think that the timing is that it was either, I think it was just before. And there's a recounting of this in one of the books about the Obama years. And I don't remember what book this anecdote appeared in, but there's a moment when they're meeting in the planning of this raid where they realize it's happening to fall on the night of this operation. And there's this conversation as to whether or not they can skip it. And then people around the table, you know, Secretary of State, of Defense, and around the table, there's this sense like, well, we can't have, if President Obama skips the Correspondents' Dinner, that's a story. Why did he skip it? We have to kind of go through the motions. He has to go to the Correspondents' Dinner. And famously, and I'm going to curse, famously, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, in one of the funniest phrases she, I believe, has ever used in the history of her time in politics, she just goes, fuck the Correspondents' Dinner. Which I love.
It's not a significant event. I mean, it's been blown into more than it really is over the years. Well, and not a significant event until the one that you participated in, which apparently launched the Trump presidency.
It just destroyed the world. But you know, everybody, Plutarch once said, silence at the proper season is wisdom and better than any speech, which sounds great until you find out he said it at a party to his wife. Plutarch was kind of a passive-aggressive dick. Anyway, we'll speak more about speaking when we come back. The cat of the week is Shackleton from New York, New York. And we're back with John Lovett. And once again, thank you, house band Kevin Kelso. Paula Poundstone, you had a question for John.
We're talking to John Lovett, who's from the podcast Love It or Leave It and also Pod Save America. He's a political expert. So, John, why do we have a system? I am not a historian and I don't really understand all the workings of government. Why do we have a system where the majority is under the tyranny of the minority, even when the majority are the office holders by a slim margin? It leads me to wonder if our forefathers were really all that brilliant, because it all feels like learning cribbage from my friend Steve Beloger.
Tough hit on him.
Yeah.
I would.
Out of nowhere. Sorry, Steve.
But, well, here's what I would say. You know, there are many reasons for the kind of counter-majoritarian aspects of our system. To protect the rights of individuals, to protect the prerogatives of slave-owning states at the time of our founding. But I do think that the fact that there is counter-majoritarian aspects of our system has always been true. And I think sometimes a lot of progressives focus on the fact that the Senate is fundamentally undemocratic, rather than the real issue that we have, which is that the Senate is fundamentally undemocratic. And right now, based on the alignment of our parties, that rewards Republicans. We didn't talk that much about how the Senate was anti-democratic when just a little more than 10 years ago, Democrats had 60 seats in the Senate. And so I think we should do everything we can to combat gerrymandering, to prevent a minority in this country of Republicans from continuing to successfully stack the courts or prevent Democrats from appointing judges by using their minority powers in the Senate. I think we should do everything we can to make this country more democratic in every way that we can. I think DC should be a state. I think we should give Puerto Rico the opportunity to choose statehood if they wish. I'll add a couple more if you want.
Guam?
You point to them.
The state of Guam?
I'm just saying I'm open to it. I'm willing to have the conversation. All right. Never been, would love to go.
Right.
Open to it. Open to it.
Long Island?
But we could. I don't know.
Long Island. I don't know if Long Island would be the state you want if it seceded. You might have a red state up there.
Yeah, I'm worried about where those electoral votes are gonna go. I mean, the South Shore, I'm not sure. Love Long Island. Proud Long Islander.
Yeah.
No complaints. I do think that sometimes we get a little stuck assuming that some of these trends are immutable or irreversible. You know, we look across the country and even some of the reddest states in the country in the past couple of years have done things like raise the minimum wage, vote to support unions, legalize marijuana, expanded Medicaid. I mean, this is something that's happening in Idaho. This is something that's happening in Utah. You have Floridians, a state we have been fighting about for a very long time, voting by not 51-49, but by over 60% to re-enfranchise people who've been convicted of crimes. So when I see that, that doesn't make me Pollyanna-ish about the nature of identity and the ways that makes people see themselves with Republicans versus Democrats. I'm not saying these things are easy to surmount, but when I see that we are able to strike those policy victories, that makes me, I am more interested in the difference between a person who would never vote for a Democrat, but would vote for progressive policies and what we can do to shrink that space. What are the ways in which we can reach those people over time to overcome some of the anti-majoritarian aspects of our system while still fighting gerrymandering, still fighting vote suppression, still doing everything we can to make the courts more fair? But anyway, that's how I feel about that.
A lot of times those outdoor programs help people develop, you know, like Outward Bound. That's something that we might consider doing with Floridians.
Is no bad ideas in a brainstorm ball.
Yeah, just sending them out into the woods with a rope and some flint and steel. Yeah, and some rice. They'll be fine.
John, you're a media mogul now. So I want to touch on that. I want to touch on that briefly because you and your fellow Obamaites, after you helped pave the way for the Trump presidency, you went and you founded Crooked Media, and that has become quite a burgeoning concern, hasn't it?
I like that you called it a concern.
It's an area of concern for us, John.
It is. No, it is. It's a burgeoning concern. Yeah, I mean, we started, so John Favreau, Tommy Vietor, who I mentioned, we all worked together for President Obama. After Trump won, we had had a podcast in the run-up to the election. We decided that, you know, what we had said throughout the election was that this was a real emergency for this country and we would need everybody to pull together. We meant it. None of us felt like we wanted to go back to our day jobs. And so we decided to start a new podcast and start this company. And it's been really gratifying to find that there's a lot of people who felt the same way as us, that they were looking for an outlet for all the, you know, as Paula said at the very beginning of this conversation, you know, the news can be depressing. The news can be hard. What do we do with those feelings? What's a way to make them useful, to not feel like you're just consuming? And so we started Crooked Media. We started with Pod Save America. We've launched a bunch of different podcasts. We've brought in a bunch of really incredible and talented hosts. Everything that we do, it can run the gamut from politics to pop culture to sports to history to the nerdiest Marvel show you can imagine. But everything we try to do, at least in some way, is about entertaining people, informing people, and inspiring them to act in some way. And, you know, we just launched this great show with Jason Rezaian, which tells the story of his time. It's called 544 Days. It's the story of his time being held in an Iranian prison and the international efforts to free him. Jason Concepcion, who is an incredibly smart podcast host who talks about everything from sports to the nerdiest of Star Wars issues, just launched a show, X-Ray Vision. And so we're trying to build a place where if you can come and be part of this big progressive community. We're going to tell you the truth. And sometimes the news is good and sometimes the news is bad, but we're never going to be cynical, even when we're pretty skeptical.
Yeah, that's what... Boy, you know what? John, you guys got to be making shitloads of money now.
By the way, you got a big laugh out of Kyle, the producer, on that one. You love that.
I
that's
didn't
a
say,
hit in the studio. Thanks a lot, Paula.
Kyle, I didn't say they were sharing the wealth. But you know what that means is, that means that if Biden's proposals, you know, if Biden's vision gets enacted and the rich people have to pay their fair share, I guess that means you guys are going to have to step up to the plate. Is that correct? You're going to have to get a bigger pie server.
As a podcast billionaire, how do you feel about that?
What kind of
John?
Question is that, Paula? Hey, send me your W-2. What is
I
this?
Know. You guys make much more money than I could ever dream of.
Listen, we don't all got wait, don't tell me money. All right.
Oh, touche.
Oh, wait a minute. That's, yeah. I haven't even thought about that. I've been burying that in the backyard. I've been putting my wait, don't tell me money into a jar for 20 years. And that jar is not full. And by the way, I convert it to coins before I put it in there. So, all right, here's something, John. Here's something very important. I am so sick of hearing that historically the president's party loses in the first off-year election. Historically, the opposition party hasn't been involved in sedition. We are in historically uncharted waters. So tell me about your no off-years campaign, because fuck historically and the off-year election.
Yes. Well, the other thing too is it's historically this is what happens, but there's lots of exceptions. And it tends to sound like, You know, no team has ever lost in a dome on a Wednesday if the game started after 5:30. Something to keep in mind.
Wait a minute. Crooked Media has a podcast about that, don't they?
Yeah, sure we do.
You guys
sure
are making a shitload of money. Go ahead. All it's not, right. You know what? It's so impolite of me. I apologize. I never. Yeah.
Let the mogul speak.
John, that would be you. John, you're the mogul. Go ahead.
I heard it. And I'm laughing. What's happening is I'm laughing and I'm gathering my fucking thoughts. All right, Paula Poundstone.
Are you guys?
Never in my life have I been treated this way. I'm going to be telling everybody. All right.
Are you guys opening an amusement park? Are you guys opening pod?
It's Biden world. Biden world.
Pod save the rides. Pod save the teacups.
It's Biden world. It gets you where you're going. You're not totally thrilled about it.
You've been on it before.
It's safe. It's not too scary. It's not that exciting. And it gets you to where you want to go most of the time.
Didn't I ride this in Clinton land? Oh, well, let's just get on.
Wait, what was the question?
So the question is, tell me about your no off years campaign.
Oh, my God. Yes. So basically no off years. The idea is, we all know that we're going into an incredibly important midterm. It will be important for a host of reasons. It will be important because if we do not have a Democratic Congress, it makes it that much harder to pass anything, though it's already still pretty fucking hard to pass something. I'll stop cursing.
You can curse all you want.
I don't know what the rules are.
It's a freeing feeling. You know what? Can you do me a favor, though? Mm-hmm. I'm watching you on Zoom and I can barely see you behind that stack of cash. Can you move that stack of cash just a little bit?
Unbelievable. 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 Just,
Paula, I'm happy for you. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy.
Sitting on a golden throne made from 90s HBO special money. Just an absolutely incredible. So all the interest you have earned from the heyday.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened here.
Back to no off years.
Yeah. No off years. So the idea is basically we're heading into this incredibly important midterm elections. Whether or not we can pass anything is on the line. Whether or not Joe Biden will be able to appoint judges is on the line. And by the way, as we head into 2024, if we have a Republican Congress and they object to the electors, whether or not we can have a free and fair election is on the line. And so
exactly,
we know that we're all going to be paying attention. We all know that we're going to be doing all we can as we head into the midterms. But there's a lot of work that can't be done when all of a sudden we're all engaged, we're all paying attention in the final few weeks and months right before the votes are cast. There's work that we need to do now. And so through no off years, people can go to votesaveamerica.com and they can basically support organizing in a few key states like Florida, states like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. And they can put money into the hands of organizers that are registering voters, that are going door to door, and so that we can start making those contacts now, not just so that they become registered voters, but so they become people we're in contact with, so that as we get closer to the election, we know how to reach them, we know what's important to them, we know what messages and policies they care about, so that we have a bigger pool of registered, engaged people heading into 2022. So we're trying to get those organizers that are on the ground right now the resources they need so that they can get as many voters on the books before we head into the next election.
That sounds great. I in the 2020 election, I did some postcarding and I don't think I was very good at it because my candidate lost. And I realized later I wrote like 200 postcards, but I would write shit like "wish you were here."
Well, I think the part of them is that you just kept saying "Bona Sera" and there were pictures of Italy. I don't really understand. You know, it doesn't really work. It's confusing to people.
Yeah, I might have made a mistake.
Bona Sera, vote Mondale.
Hey, if they couldn't figure it out, we don't want their vote, right, everybody?
That's exactly right. No, it isn't.
All right. So, you know, when you say, because like I watch Rachel Maddow and I love Rachel Maddow. But one of the things she'll say is she'll say like, OK, we need to be keeping an eye on this. And I think to myself, as I sit in front of a screen watching Rachel Maddow, I think I'm keeping an eye on it. Like, what does that mean? It's not really a call to action. It's telling me that by obsessing over it, watching Rachel Maddow, and again, Rachel Maddow is fantastic, but it's telling me that that's somehow enough. So what I like, and I, you know, God knows what kind of a cut you guys take from this, but what I like is that there is a place to, to like a one-stop shop where you can get that early intervention, that those early connections that you're talking about with the voters. And I'm only kidding. I know you don't take a cut.
We don't actually, just so people know, like we direct all the resources directly to people. You know, when you say the thing about keeping an eye on something, it really reminds me of, have you ever been like, you know, in bed with your partner, and as you're falling asleep, your partner turns to you and says like, don't forget, we need laundry detergent. And it's like, and now it's like, why are you outsourcing that to me? You don't forget it. You keep an eye on it. I have to remember this. I'm not writing this down. What's happening? But I take your point is what I mean. I take your point, Paula. I agree. And I do think like, there's a lot of noise. And if you want to find a way to like be involved in a way that you know is helpful and targeted and that will make a difference, that is what we try to do with Vote Save America. We try to make sure we're not wasting your money and we're not wasting your time when we ask you to volunteer.
You know what? I trust you. I don't know Thank why you. I trust you, but I do. And one of the things, because I really have been a Pod Save America listener for a long time. And one of the things that I have fantasized about doing is challenging your podcast people to a basketball game against our podcast people. And I just consider yourself slapped with a glove. I would really like to.
Wow.
Do you think you can make that happen, John?
I mean, do I think I can make myself play basketball? Honestly, I'm not sure.
Well, keep in mind that we, you know, we don't really, you know,
play
it's
basketball.
Me. It's me and Bonnie Burns and Adam Felber and Tony Anita Hall. I mean, it's not the dream team that we have over here.
I think your only hope is if you all really do your best to guard Tommy and John. And then you don't worry about me so much because I probably can't physically reach the rim with the basketball, even if I have it. You'll probably be in good shape if you're really kind of, you know, what do you call it there? Is a zone defense?
Yeah.
What's a zone defense?
Well, no, zone defense is where you stand on a certain part of the court. So that's not where what you're saying.
You're thinking man to man.
Double
I'm thinking
teaming.
Man to man. I'm thinking double teaming.
Yeah.
Are we still talking about basketball?
I don't know.
Yeah, we are. No, we're talking about the laundry
it
detergent.
Turned there for a minute.
No, so here's the thing. I think that John Lovett is like the secret weapon of the Pod Save America basketball team. And he is just talking shit right now, saying that like, oh yeah, don't pay any attention to me. And then it's just going to be score, score, score. And the other thing that we really wanted you guys to join our book club. And we were hoping that you would have reached out to us by now. We started with Moby. It's the Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone book club. It's early on in each episode of our podcast. And we started with Moby Dick. And now our second book is Eat, Pray, Love. I'm sure you guys would love it.
I think it's amazing to start with Moby Dick. I think that's really cool. I think it's really cool to dare your listeners to give up.
They did.
Did you at least?
I don't think they all did. I think so.
Now, can I ask you a question about Moby Dick?
Yeah.
Which is, and this is a personal question. All right. Yeah. And so I apologize if this is too intimate. Do you skip the whaling chapters? Because I skip the whaling chapters.
No, I listened to it. It was unabridged, but I did use the audiobook. And no, I listened to the chapters about.
I skimmed the whaling chapters.
The ones that just get into like how the hooks are shaped and the way they make the wood tied to the rope.
I didn't read it. Yeah. Couldn't stand it.
See, people skip
See,
the whaling
as it
chapters.
Turns out, look, now they're telling me. I'll tell you something. I had a theory. I had a theory about the book that Melville's dad was his editor. And that he just felt that everything that Herman did was fantastic. Because I did think they could have maybe trimmed a bit on the old description of the whales.
Oh, yeah. Listen. Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. I'll say one more thing about Moby Dick, which is if you ever want to give yourself a treat, Burt Reynolds did a recording of Moby Dick. He did an audio version of
You're
Moby
kidding
Dick.
Me.
Burt Reynolds did an audio version of Moby Dick. And he starts with such a thick and quite terrible sailor's accent, like a pirate.
Like a call me Ishmael. So he says, call me Ishmael.
But of course, because Burt Reynolds had, this was not something he had set out to do, and it's clear he had no passion for it. The accent just goes away through most of the chapters, then comes back hard at the start of the next chapter. And if you ever want a treat, it'll help you get through the book. And I believe it is a bridge, so you won't get the wailing chapters. That's a little tip from me.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, that is a great...
Well, we will invite you to our next book club. John, that was...
Please do.
That was fantastic. But we're going to now... What we're going to take is all the information you dropped on us, and we're going to run all of this information through the old Pouncedonator. Paula?
The house band has been fantastic. Thank you so much, Kevin Kelso on the piano. Could I push my luck and ask you for some background music here while I tell you what the old Pouncedonator spit out? This is a rare find for our listeners. I'm so glad to be able to play for you a recording from a meeting with John Lovett and President Obama. I think we only have Obama's track from back when Lovett worked in the White House as a speechwriter. Well, hey there, little fella. I read over the speech, and it's really wonderful. You must be some kind of a protege, because you seem awfully young to do this kind of work. There are a couple of things I'd like to change. I'll hurry, because I know your mom will be here to pick you up soon. I think right here, John, are you listening? Could you put the transformer down for a minute? I think right here, where I'm supposed to indicate Speaker of the House John Boehner and say neener, 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 could be softened a bit. Also, I don't think we need to mention lollipops when we reference the healthcare bill. You don't need to cry. I'm not angry. This is how you learn. Hey, I was 7 myself once. It's really remarkable what you and your little friends have done. I'll bet you're gonna make a shitload of money someday. Now, I've got a meeting to go to. Can I trust you to remember not to use crayons on the table while you wait for your mother? All right. High five, little buddy.
You want to catch Love It or Leave It? You can catch it live on Thursdays in Hollywood or at the Beacon Theater in New York City on November the 12th. Just go to crooked.com/events for more info on that. And by the way, thank you so much for showing up. John Lovett, everybody.
John Lovett.
Thank you.
This was so wonderful. Thank you very much.
This is a blast. I appreciate it.
I want you to take back to the nest our basketball challenge and our book club invitation.
Okay, I will.
And my job application. I mean, yes. Fun fact, there are more than 24 time zones around the world, including Eastern, Pacific, and Hammer. And we're back. Kevin Kelso, you could tickle those ivories all night as far as I'm concerned. Thank you for your participation. All right, Paula, we have this new contest running, right?
We do. You can win a Zoom party with Paula Poundstone, me, and Adam Felber. Adam Felber from Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, the one you're listening to. We're having a contest because, as I've said before, when we just picked random listeners and offered them a Zoom party on a mutually agreed upon night, they said stuff like, well, why would I want that? I don't listen that often. And the classic, I'm busy that night. So take a guess which one of my 10 cats stands on the refrigerator and cries at me every evening starting at about 6 p.m. and fill out the contest form with your guess at bit.ly/NLTPP Zoom 3. That's bit.ly/NLTPP Zoom 3. Or you can just go to our Facebook page and click on that link,
But Paula, why would we go to the Facebook page when we could do something as easy as just going to bit.ly/nltppzoom3 on our browser?
It rolls right off the tongue. I don't see why people wouldn't remember that. Okay, here's how it'll work. The names of the people with the correct guess will be put into a drawing to win a Zoom party with me and Adam and up to 50 of your friends. And by the way, no one has 50 friends, so there's no judging here. Here's the list of cats. Harrison, Tonks, Mrs. Fezziwig, Nash, Theo, Severus, Hardy, ShamWow, Wednesday, and Lawson. So have your guess in by October 25th, and there's only one entry per person, or else you could make 10 guesses. And if you're going to pull some shit like that, you'd probably be willing to overturn the will of the people to meet the demands of your own power lust. And there will be no special advantages given to John Lovett. Get in line, Lovett.
That's right, love it. Get in line.
Take your bags of cash and move to the back of the line. Oh, hold on just a minute. I would like a word with Tony Anita Hull, if I may. Tony Anita Hull, I know of a wonderful bookstore in Pasadena, California, Roman's Bookstore, to whom I pledge to give dollars worth of free advertising if you can tell me the meaning of the word pugnacious without dishonoring yourself by Googling it. In fact, I'm sure that Roman's Bookstore in Pasadena would not even want this dollar's worth of free advertising if it was obtained in such an odious manner.
All right. Well, Ms. Culpepper, I'll officiate this. Tony, Anita Hull, Ms. Culpepper has appeared to challenge you to not Google, but just define pugnacious for her. Can you do it?
I Googled before you said not to Google.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And I can't unsee it.
It's a calumny. That's what it is. It's a calumny.
I wanted to be honest. I'm so sorry. I feel really guilty.
I appreciate your honesty about the fact that you blatantly cheated. I can guarantee you, Tony, that I would never encourage you to Google. For you, it's a disease. It's not just a service, a technology service. It's an illness. It's a mental illness with the Googling. All right, go ahead and tell us the meaning.
Eager or quick to argue, quarrel, or fight.
Well, isn't that remarkable the way you had that in your mind?
Oh, well. It was worth a try, Mrs. Culpepper.
She can't be stopped from the Googling. All right, anyways, thank you, Tony Anita Hull. And that's Roman's Bookstore in Pasadena. Dollars worth of free advertising right there.
Okay, Mrs. Culpepper, everybody. All right, Paula, I have some great news and also some bad news. Huh. The great news is that the interview we just did with John Lovett went great, right?
Oh, man, he's fantastic.
It also went kind of long.
He's fantastic. It went long?
It went a little long. So what we're going to do is we're going to...
He says a lot. Doesn't he say a lot? That's what it is.
The so much as the content, the really nutritious content that we got. In any event, mm-hmm. whether it was the or the content, the bad news is that we are going to have to postpone Mailbag Positivity Edition until next week.
Fuck. And we were so excited to be positive. Damn it.
Well, we're just going to have to work on that, I guess, right?
I don't think we can be positive at another time.
Nobodies, if you have questions or comments, drop us a line at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com or at an incredibly complicated URL. Paula, what's going on in your Poundstone product empire this week?
Adam, Poundstone Industries, also known as Lipstick Nancy Incorporated, has recently been featured in a prominent publication on successful small businesses.
Yeah, it was the Poundstone Industries newsletter.
Listeners continue to enjoy the shop at my website, paulapoundstone.com, where they can purchase my social justice rap song, Not My Butterfinger, as well as the Not My Butterfinger ringtone. There's no better time than fall sweater weather to curl up with a good book like the totally unscientific study of The Search for Human Happiness, which is also available in paperback or the audio version on CD at the store at paulapoundstone.com. If you click on the tour page at paulapoundstone.com, you can get tickets to join me in Baltimore at the Crash Hour Auditorium on Thursday, November 4th, in Thousand Oaks, California at Bank of America Performing Arts Center on Friday, November 5th, and in Alexandria, Virginia at the Birchmere on November 19th, 20th, and 21st.
All right, everybody, subscribe to this podcast. It's free. You'll get it every week at no charge. If there's a subject or topic you want to know about, tell us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. That's our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Leigh Felber. Special thanks to our guest, John Lovett. Oh, we love us some Lovett.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
And speaking of people we love, house band Kevin Kelso.
Woo. Yes.
Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Nita Hull. Starburns production by Land Romo. Poundstone Industries production by Vic Lowry. Transcription services for the show provided by Transcribe Me, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at transcribeme.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
I actually don't think he said that much.
Oh my God, he says over and over again. He says,
I didn't catch that at all.
I get this, you know, he's like, you know, it's funny because he started in the business very, very young and he's still in many ways a little boy. And
I feel like you're overstating that.
No, I don't think so. And he has uncertainty. And when his uncertainty arises, he'll say, you can almost feel his little hands reaching up for his mother.
Paula, he's well into his 30s and is an incredibly successful podcaster.
Guy's making a shitload of money. I mean, successful doesn't begin to explain it. I mean, did you see the car he pulled up in?
Yeah, that was unexpected.
Oh, my God.
You don't usually see that many windows on a car.
Yeah, it was not the Arkansas Chug-a-Bug, I can tell you that.
No, it's rare that you see a car with a second story.
Second story and an elevator. Guy doesn't even take the stairs up to the second story of his house. He takes the elevator, and the whole time he's in the elevator, he's going, it's like it's a cry for help. It's a yearning for his mother. And it's also just a tick. He's got like a tick.
I feel like you're looking too deeply into this.
No, I don't think so. And by the way, it's this kind of careful psychological analysis that is going to make Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone kick the shit out of Pod Save America in basketball.
Yeah. Those are the two most important positions, they say, on a team, point guard and psychoanalyst.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All I have to do is, like, if he's like, if we're playing like man to man and he's on me, I'll just go, John, your mother's calling. And he's going to turn and run. And then I just take the shot.
Starburns Audio, a podcast network.